Okay, so you'll see I handed out new notes for chapter 10. So at the end of the previous chapter on units, there's some examples in Magma of how to compute in various cases, and I'm going to skip those in class, but you may want to skim through those, especially if you're going to use Magma to do any computations involving units. So there are many useful examples there. But in the interest of getting somewhere, I'm going to skip doing those in class again. So what we'll start with today is the decomposition and inertia groups. That's really where we want to get to. These are groups contained in the Galois group that are associated to primes of the ring of integers of a number field. And the decomposition group and the inertia group somehow together measure various properties of primes. So what I'll do first is a brief review of a few basic facts about Galois extensions, which probably everyone here knows very well. But I'll do it very quickly. And then what I'll do is prove a really nice result, which is that if you take a prime ideal of, well, let's say we have an extension K over L, and you take a prime ideal of the ring of integers of L, and then factor it in K as product, say, MI to the EI, so this is T of K. If K is a Galois extension of L, then a very nice thing happens. The EIs are all the same. Also, something called the residue class degrees, which are the degrees of the relative extensions of residue class fields associated to the M sub I, those are all equal as well. And moreover, if E is the common exponent and F is the common residue class degree, and there are G factors here, then E times F times G is equal to N degree of the extension. So this is nice. In the case when the extension is Galois, you have this nice statement about the exponents and the properties of the primes that appear in the factorization of an ideal. It's just completely not at all true if the extension isn't Galois. But when it's Galois, you have this very clean description. And I'll give a complete proof of that today. And then give you some examples. And finally, define the decomposition group. So I'll define the decomposition group right now. If you have a ring of integers OK of a number field K, and you fix a prime ideal P in OK, then the decomposition group at P is the set of elements sigma in the Galois group of K over Q. So here you can see that I'm assuming that K is Galois over Q. There's also a relative notion when K is only Galois over some field L. It's a set of sigma in the Galois group of K over Q, such that sigma of the prime ideal P is equal to the prime ideal P. So it sends P to itself. It could commute around the elements of P, but as an ideal P, it's sent to itself. So this is a subgroup of the Galois group. And it fits into a nice exact sequence, which has the decomposition group in the middle, and then on the right you have the Galois group of the residue class field, OK mod P over FP. And that map is surjective, and the kernel is by definition something called the inertia group of P. And this defines the inertia group, that's what I is. So this is the definition of the inertia group. It's the kernel of the reduction map. So this exact sequence is really kind of very basic and important, and our goal is to prove that you have such an exact sequence. I don't know if I'll be able to completely finish that today. If I don't, I'll have to finish that off after spring break. But this is really the picture to keep in the back of your mind. Given a prime ideal P in the ring of integers of a Galois extension, you can associate, as indicated, a subgroup of the Galois group. It's really the stabilizer of P if you view the Galois group as acting on the primes line over little p, integer p. So this is also, you can think of it just as a stabilizer in the Galois group of the prime ideal p. And that decomposition group maps in a natural way to the Galois group of this finite extension, and amazingly you can prove the map is surjective. Every automorphism of the finite of this extension of finite fields lives to an automorphism in the Galois group. and the ambiguity in the lift is measured by the inertia group. And the fact about the inertia group is that it's trivial if and only if the prime P is unramified, in the sense that if you look at the factorization P of K as a product, I equals 1 to G, Pi to the Ei, then if P, say, equals Pi, then you want the, then the inertia group is trivial if and only if Ei is equal to 1. So in that case, this exact sequence is slightly simpler. It's just an isomorphism between the decomposition group and the Galois group of the extension of residue class fields. And this Galois group, since it's a Galois group of a finite extension of Fp over Fp, has a canonical generator, namely pth powering. So if you take that canonical generator, then it corresponds to an element of decomposition group. In the case when the inertia group is trivial, i.e. your prime is unramified, you get from an element here an element of the decomposition group, and that is called the Frobenius element associated to the prime ideal P. And that element is crucial in defining L functions attached to Galois representations. Yes?
The P before OK.
Yes, this is an integer. So P is in, P is in, how about this? So P Z is equal to the maximal ideal P intersect Z.
Okay.
Okay. That's the definition of the P. P is the residue class degree also. So, sorry, not the residue, the residue characteristic. P equals the characteristic of the finite field OK mod the maximal ideal Gothic P. Okay. So this is where we're getting at, and this whole construction where you get a Frobenius element in here, is, as I just mentioned, important in constructing L functions attached to representations of the group Galois Q-bar over Q. So the way that works is, given a linear homomorphism, a continuous linear homomorphism from the Galois group of Q-bar over Q to a finite, to the automorphisms of a finite dimensional vector space, you choose any prime that's unramified in an appropriate sense, then you get a Frobenius element. You consider its characteristic polynomial, which is something that's well defined. It doesn't depend on which prime Gothic P you choose lying over a little p, and from that you get a whole bunch of characteristic polynomials, one for each prime integer, and if you package those all together you get an analytic function on some right half plane, and in many cases it is known to or conjectured to analytically continue to the whole complex plane, and properties of that function tell you a lot about the representation of the Galois group. So I'll talk more about that probably after spring break, and Frank will say a little bit Thursday. So I'm not going to start elliptic curves until probably one lecture after spring break. Okay, so that's where we're going. Our goal today is to set up some theory for Galois extensions of number field of, well, Galois extensions of Q or of number fields, and see how when you consider the ring of integers and then consider primes in it, you have some additional interesting structure that's put on the Galois group. Yes?
Is there a lecture on Thursday?
There is a lecture on Thursday. I won't be giving it. Frank Caligari will be giving it. By the way, if anyone here is interested in doing a senior thesis in number theory, you should definitely come to that lecture, because Frank would be a good person to advise your senior thesis, for example, if nothing else, if you haven't seen him teach. So he'll be talking. He's going to, I think, talk a lot about Frobenius element, these elements right here in the context of a specific S3 extension, that is degree 6 extension of Q. And I know, it should be very interesting. But there will be class on Thursday. Okay, your midterms are here, so I'll hand them back.
So, if you have any questions about the grading, let me know.
Basically, if it was clear that you knew what you were doing, you got all credit on the problem, and if you didn't, then you didn't get much.
But people did generally pretty well. Okay, so on with the lecture for today. So I'm going to start with section 10.1 more formally now, unless there are any questions. Okay, first, a Galois extension of, so K over Q is Galois if every automorphism of, well, if every, well, okay, here's the most basic definition. If you view K as a subfield of C, if every time you embed K into C, then in fact it lands inside of K again. So that's Galois. More generally, if you have an extension K over L, then this is Galois if the automorphisms of K as a field that fix L have, if that group has cardinality equal to the degree of the extension. Since I'm talking about number fields. In complete generality, Galois means normal and separable, but this is a characterization. And in this case, you call this the Galois group of K over L. It's the same as the automorphism group. And see what else do I want to say. Good examples of Galois extensions are any quadratic extension of any number field is Galois over that number field. So if K is L adjoined square root, then this is Galois over L. More generally, if you join a root of unity to L, then you get a Galois extension. So here this is a primitive nth root of unity. So this is a cyclotomic extension of L. So quadratic, cyclotomic. And this one has an abelian Galois group. For example, if L is equal to Q, so you take K to be Q adjoined zeta n, then the Galois group of K over Q, well, if you have an automorphism of K, then it has to send zeta n to another primitive nth root of unity, and that other primitive nth root of unity, well, since these form a cyclic group, the other primitive nth root of unity is some power of zeta n. So you get a homomorphism, an inclusion from the Galois group of K over Q to z mod n z star. Because given an automorphism sigma zeta n, it's zeta n to the power of something a, where this a you can view as an element of z mod n z star. And in fact, this map has to be an isomorphism because the degree of this extension is equal to phi of n, as one can check. So, in general, the Galois group could be a little smaller because this k is just the compositum of L with q zeta n. Also, any compositum of Galois extensions is Galois. So these are a couple of examples. Also, you can take any polynomial at all and take its splitting field. That's Galois. So you take all the roots of the polynomial and adjoin them to Q, and that gives you a Galois extension. And if your polynomial has degree n and it's random, then the splitting field will be an extension of degree n factorial. So massive extension in general. Though, of course, you can find examples where the splitting field is smaller, but it's hard. So I guess that's the basics about Galois extensions. Now back to number theory, since you actually all know this sort of thing already. In the context of number theory, what you have is just to, you know, you can do all this in a relative context, but for the most part, I'll just prove things for a Galois extension K of Q. But you can prove things for K over L Galois, and then they're very similar statements. But let's suppose we have a Galois extension K over Q, and say the group is G. Then G acts on many of the objects that we defined so far in this course. For example, you can take the ring of integers. So G, of course, acts on K, but, well, that's one thing. But G also acts on the ring of integers of K. Since if you have an algebraic integer that satisfies some polynomial, and then when you hit that's monic with integer coefficients, and if you hit the element of OK by an element of the Galois group, you get another root of that same polynomial. So integrality is preserved. The units, UK, this is also a module for the action of the Galois group. Or, yeah, it's an abelian group that's acted on by the Galois group. The fractional ideals, you can take all the fractional ideals of OK. So I think I call that give OK. This free abelian group, it's free. It's a free abelian group with basis the prime ideals of OK. This is a module for the action of the Galois group, and you can imagine kind of how the Galois group. We'll see a lot about how the Galois group acts, but here what happens is that the primes lying over a given prime of Z are permuted around transitively by the Galois group, and that's it. They don't get changed. So the primes lying over one prime Z in Z. You never get sent to any of the other primes. So the way that the Galois group acts on here, if you imagine there's kind of the primes that are all lying over a given prime of Z, all the primes over another prime of Z, and so on. So each of these little packets gets permuted around transitively, and that's a non-trivial thing that we'll show in a minute. But so the orbits for the action of G on the basis for div OK is the orbit, the little orbits are these, the set of primes lying over a given prime. What else? So the class group. The Galois group acts on the class group of K. And that's because, well, the way the Galois group acts on an ideal, I, if you have an ideal I, then sigma I for an element sigma in the Galois group is sigma of is the set of all sigma of x such that x is in I. If you take a principal ideal, then what you get is the set of all sigma of something, well, if I is the principal ideal generated by alpha, then sigma of I is the set of all sigma of, say, alpha beta, such that beta is in OK. But because it's an automorphism, that's sigma of alpha times sigma of beta, and sigma is a bijection on OK, so in fact this is equal to the ideal generated by sigma of alpha. So principal ideals are sent to principal ideals under the action of the Galois group. Hence the class group has a well-defined action on it. So the Galois group acts on the class group, which is very interesting because you take this random Galois extension and then it has some Galois group, then you take its class group, and that class group, it's a representation for this group G. So it gives you some information about the class group, potentially. One particularly interesting case is the case of a cyclotomic extension of Q. You take this field, Q adjoint zeta n, and consider its class group. This is something of great interest for, thinking about Fermat's last theorem. It's some abelian group, and it's equipped with an action of Z mod n Z star. So it's an abelian group with an action of Z mod n Z star. And you can break up this abelian group. You can find certain, well, whenever you have a character of Z mod n Z star, you can find the part of the class group on which the Galois group acts via that character. So you can break up the class group further and ask questions about different components of the class group. So it's nice that the Galois group acts on the class group because it gives you more refined class groups
that you get from looking at more precisely how the glass, how the Galois group acts in here. Another thing, which is what I was just saying before, if you let S sub P be the set of primes lying over P, so this is S2, S3, and so on, each individual set, as I mentioned before, is acted on by the Galois group. And the reason for that is the following. If you have a prime, Gothic P that's lying over an integer prime P, that means that PZ is equal to Gothic P intersect OK. The inverse image of Gothic P via the inclusion from Z into OK has to be a prime ideal, and this is the prime ideal it is. Now, if you apply the Galois group to Gothic P, so apply an element sigma to Gothic P, and then intersect that with OK. Oops, this should be Z, sorry. So if you intersect sigma P with Z, so you're taking the elements of sigma of P that are in Z, and here it's the elements of P that are in Z. So in particular, this equality says that the prime number P is in Gothic P and in the integers, and hence it will be fixed by sigma. So certainly the prime number P is in here, and that means that this intersection, because this intersection is a prime ideal, is PZ. And also, of course, P being Gothic P being prime implies that sigma of Gothic P is prime, because sigma is an automorphism, so it preserves any ring theoretic property. So sigma of P also lies over the prime number P. It doesn't lie over a different prime number. So you get an action of the Galois group on this set of primes. So the Galois group acts on a whole bunch of different things. And now we have to prove some things about how this action works. Does anybody not get their exam back? Gregory Valiant? Yeah. All right. Okay, so now on to section 10.2, and here what I'm going to do is prove that E times F times G equals N. So for a Galois extension, all of the exponents, when you factor a prime of Z, all of the exponents in the factorization are the same. And moreover, the degrees of the extensions of FP that you get by quotienting out the ring of integers by these prime ideals, those are all the same as well. So really, this is the formula to keep in mind. Okay, first, a definition. If you have, I'm just going to do everything in the context of a single Galois extension K over Q, I'll prove everything in that context, but I'll make the definitions and the statements in a more general context, just so you know what they are. Just that the proofs are a little bit simpler notationally if I don't give them in general. And I'm sure you can figure out how they work in general. So here's the setup. Here's the definition. Suppose you have an extension K over L, and it's a Galois extension. Actually, you don't need this. You don't need Galois for the definition of gradient. So suppose you have an extension K over L, and the prime ideal M in OK that lies over a prime P in OL. Now here's a number that you can associate to this situation. It's the residue class degree, and here it is, F M over P is equal to the degree of the finite field OK mod M as an extension of the finite field OL mod P. So you have an extension of residue class fields. Each of these are finite fields. They're each extensions of FP, where P is the residue characteristic. And this extension its degree is the residue class degree. So we'll call it F. So one basic fact about the residue class degree is that it's multiplicative in towers. If you have three fields, M over K over L, then the residue class degree of M over L, of a prime of M over the corresponding prime of L, so here P is by definition M intersect OK. So if you have a prime ideal of M, then you take the residue class degree of that prime ideal over the corresponding prime ideal of L is equal to the product of the residue class degree of the prime from M down to K, and then from K down to L. So you have a multiplicativity in towers of residue class degrees. M, K, L, so the prime up here, and then M, which is P intersect OK, and then say P, which is M intersect OL, then F, P over P is equal to F. Weierstrass P over M times F M over Gothic P. So you have this multiplicativity. And the reason, oh yes, please.
Oh,
if you have a question.
You just have a typo.
Thank you.
M intersect OK is M. It should be OL.
Oops. OL. Thank you. Right here. OL right here. So here, the reason is just because this is the degree of the extension OM mod P over OK mod M. And this is the extension of OK mod M over OL mod P. And the product of those two extensions, the degrees of those two extensions, is the degree of the extension OM mod P over OL mod Gothic P. So it's really nothing more than the fact that the degree of extensions of fields is multiplicative in towers. That's all this is. Because on the left-hand side, we have O M mod Weierstrass P over O L mod Gothic P. And on the right-hand side, you have O M mod Weierstrass P over O K mod M and O K mod M over OL mod Gothic P. See, so that's very clear that those two are equal. Because OK mod M is contained between these two. So now for this EFG equals N thing, which is really a very powerful statement, as we'll see. I mean, something you can use a lot. If you can figure out the ramification for one prime, then you know what it is for all of them. If you can figure out what the inertia degree is for one of the primes laying over a given prime, you know what it is for all of them, and so on. And you can figure out how many primes there are just knowing something about the other numbers appearing here. And the way we're going to prove this is to prove that the Galois group acts transitively on the primes lying over a given prime. And also that the Galois group, when you apply it, it doesn't change these invariants. So then you get that all the invariants are the same. So, yes.
The E and the G, ramification
index. So E is, here's precisely what it is. So if you take P and factor it in OK, you have a product I equals 1 through G, MI to the EI. And the amazing thing is that when this extension is Galois, which was not the case in the general definition, but in the special case when this is Galois, then EIs are all the same. Call the common number E.
And that's just because the Galois group takes them all to each other.
Exactly. Moreover, the FIs are all the same. Now it's even easier to see. So the fact that the FIs are the same is, once you know that the Galois group acts transitively, you get an isomorphism from the field OK mod MI to the sigma OK mod sigma of MI. This isomorphism tells you that the F for MI is the same as the F for sigma of MI. So once you know that the Galois group acts transitively, the Fs are all the same. So you let F be the common Fi, E be the common Ei, and then the formula is EFG equals N. And the last part of the formula, the fact that EFG equals N will just follow from the Chinese remainder theorem, as we'll see.
What is G again? Oh,
so
sorry,
G is just
sorry.
A number of factors. A number of factors. But this is this statement that these the E is constant and that F is constant. This is completely false if your extension is not Galois. It only works when the extension is Galois. Otherwise, it's just completely wrong. And it's very very easy to find. It's very hard to find examples where these would all be the same when your extension isn't Galois. It's really a special property of Galois extensions. So watch out, because Galois extensions are very rare. Most extensions are not Galois. All right, so what to prove first? Okay, so let's prove the Galois group acts transitively. And the proof is pretty tricky, actually. And it's going to use that thing we proved a while ago using the Chinese remainder theorem, where if we had an ideal and another ideal, we could find an element so that the principal ideal it generates divided by that the first ideal is coprime to the second ideal. So remember that technical kind of lemma that seemed kind of weird, but we could prove it, and we keep using it over and over again. We're going to use that again here. And that will really be the main input to proving that the Galois group acts transitively on the primes line over a given prime. All right, so our goal now is to prove what I just stated. Suppose K over L is a Galois extension. I'm going to state the theorem in generality and only prove it in the case when L is equal to Q. So suppose you have a Galois extension, K over L, and you fix a prime P in OL, and then you write P OK as product I equals 1 through G, MI, BEI. Then, well, first, G, the Galois group, acts transitively on the set M1 up through MG. And second, E1 equals dot 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 equals EG. They're all the same, call them E. And F1 equals dot 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 equals FG. So this follows easily from the first statement. And 3E times F times G is equal to the degree of K over Q. Over L, sorry. So this is our goal right now, to prove this. Any questions? And I said that most extensions are in Galois, and this is a theorem about a Galois extension, but at least every extension is contained in a Galois extension. You can just take its Galois closure, and often you can understand what's going on in an extension by considering its Galois closure using this result and somehow going back. So don't give up hope in general. Okay, so now let's prove the first part, that G acts transitively. And again, for notational simplicity, let's assume that L is equal to Q. But the proof is really the same in general.
Did you state it in general?
I did, yeah. I just stated it in general.
So, but then what is OL in general?
What do you mean, what is OL?
Oh, okay, so you're defining it as the...
It's just the full ring of integers in general. OL is just the ring of integers of L in general.
Okay.
Wait, what generality are you?
There's
always
number
fields.
Number field, right?
Yeah, everything's a number field in all. In total, so the generality in which. I should emphasize that. These are number fields. Since I just mentioned Galois extensions, for example, of finite fields, I should really... Yeah, I only mean that I'm stating this in the case of number fields.
I mean, it doesn't even make sense. Not in the case, does it?
Yeah, I don't know really how to make sense of this for a completely arbitrary field extension, Galois extension of fields, because as Steve said, what is OL? You can probably make sense of this for function fields of curves over finite fields. So, FP adjoin T, FP adjoin some other variable modulus some relation. I'm not sure that the statement's exactly the same unless you, maybe you have to assume the extension is separable. Okay, so let's prove transitivity. So first, let's show that we have a transitive action. All right, and our notation will be now, we have a prime p in the integers, and I'll factor p of k as, in the notes I have product pi, but I'm going to use product mi because I'm speaking. So product I equals 1 through g, mi to the ei. And we want to show that Galois permutes the mi around transitively. All right, so here's the basic trick. Once you use this trick, then it's somewhat straightforward. So there's an A in OK such that A, the principal ideal generated by A divided by, we'll just take one of the P's, say, all right, one of the M's, so let's say M equals M1. A divided by M, this is coprime to P OK. We can make it coprime to any integral ideal we want, any non-zero integral ideal. So let's make it coprime to P OK. And it's also an integral ideal itself. So I could say A is an M, I think. Yeah. So this is integral, and it's coprime to P OK. And that's just a exact application of what we proved before. If you had any ideal I, you could find some element of it so that the quotient is an integral ideal that's coprime to any ideal j. Where you fix, I mean, given an I and a j, you can do that. And we proved that just using the Chinese remainder theorem. Just wrote it down. Okay, so we have such an A. Now, what you do is you take the product of the conjugates of this integral ideal. Okay, so if I call this ideal, let's just let I be the product of the conjugates over every element of the Galois group, sigma of this integral ideal. So if you take an integral ideal and hit it by the Galois group, you get an integral ideal again. So what I'm doing is I'm taking a product of integral ideals. So I is an ideal of OK. This is a genuine ideal. And now we're just going to investigate more precisely what it is and use a little bit of what we know in order to see that there's no possible way the Galois group doesn't act transitively on the MI. So that's the idea of the proof. Okay? So now you just follow your nose at this point, essentially. I'll follow my notes rather than my nose. So this is product sigma in G. Sigma of A, okay, so sigma of A, okay, over sigma of M. Just because, as I mentioned before, a principal ideal goes to a principal ideal, and it's the ideal generated by the image of a generator under sigma. And now, this is just it's a product of these ideals, so so you can rewrite this as the norm from k down to q of A times OK, so it's that ideal, that principal ideal, divided by the product of over all elements of the Galois group sigma of m. So all I've done is I'm thinking of each of these as a fractional ideal. I'm doing arithmetic in the group of fractional ideals, and I'm writing this product as, well, the product on the top divided by the product on the bottom. The product on the top is the product of the principal ideals generated by each of the conjugates of A. So this is what it is. It's the principal ideal generated by the norm, which is an integer, divided by the product of the conjugates of M, because that's exactly a product we're taking down here. Yes, please.
One comment here could
yes.
be, so if your ground field is not Q, then how do you define it? Like, you can define it the same way, but does it cause any problems?
You can define the norm.
It's still a relative norm.
You can define a relative,
yeah,
norm,
relative norm,
and
it
it's just the determinant
idea.
Of left multiplication. Notice it's a number.
It's a number.
So
okay.
You take, if you have K over L, then to define the relative norm, you it's the determinant of left multiplication on K viewed as an L vector space, which
so
is completely well defined.
Product of the,
it's an element of L. So you could fix a basis for K as an L vector space, and then the determinant will be an element of L. So this norm would be an element of L instead of Q. But it's not well defined only up to a unit. It's really well defined. The determinant's well defined.
It's the product of the orbit of the L.
Yeah. That would also be what it is. Either way, I like the determinants better, but you could just as well define it to be the product of the images of A under each of the embeddings that fix L. So that's certainly a concrete, well-defined thing as well. Okay, so any other questions about this? Now, the neat thing is that this is an integral ideal, hence that's an integral ideal, since they're equal. And that means that you have some cancellation going on here. You have that every single one of these sigma of m's has to appear up here somewhere because you have to get an integral ideal. So each sigma of m, for every sigma in the Galois group, divides this thing at the top. And the thing at the top is the principal ideal generated by an integer in Z, and that integer is a multiple of P because A is an m. So the conclusion is that I integral implies that the product sigma in G sigma of M, this divides the norm, which is an integer, and that integer has to be a multiple of P. So I'll just call this norm M, so this is M OK. Now, the other crucial fact is that this is coprime to P OK. We haven't used that yet. So if you have an ideal and it's coprime to P times OK, its conjugates, its images under the Galois group are also coprime to P OK, because P is generated by something in the integers. So if you have an ideal J, and J plus, so here J is an ideal of OK, if J plus OK is the unit ideal, is OK, then the same will be true for the image of J under each element of sigma. Because if you take an element of sigma, you get sigma of J plus sigma of P OK, which is just P OK, and this is certainly equal to OK. So you see that each of the conjugates of J is also coprime to P OK. So these quotients are all coprime to P OK, even after you take their image under sigma. So these are all coprime to P OK. That means that this product is coprime to P OK. So this, if you divide out, you get something that's coprime. It's not divisible by, it's coprime to P. This quotient is coprime to P. So on the top you have You have an you have an ideal, it's generated by an integer. The integer is a multiple of p. M is in pz, because the integer is... I have to justify that. So a is in m. That means that the ideal generated by a is contained in the ideal m. So when you take the norm, a is an element of m, so the ideal generated should be contained in m. Yeah. But when you take the norm, then you're taking, then the norm, this tells you that the norm of a is a multiple of, the residue characteristic of m, which is p. So the norm of a is a multiple of p. So here you have this thing which is a multiple of p. And but when you divide out by this, you get something that's coprime to p. So every single prime divisor of p must occur in the denominator in order to cancel it all out. And now we're done. We've now proved transitivity.
Can you say that last thing again?
Sure, I plan to. Okay, so you take this quotient, and you get something that's coprime to p, because after all, this quotient is equal to a product of things that are coprime to p. Good? So this quotient is coprime to p. The numerator is just it's an ideal, which is just, it's some integer, it's a multiple of p times ok. So this top thing is, you know, I'll say it's a times p times ok. And in the bottom, you have all the conjugates of m. And when you divide the two, you get something that's coprime to p ok. So if you imagine the factorization of the numerator, it's the product of the mi plus some other stuff, because the numerator, it's an ideal, it's a multiple of p ok. So the numerator factors as a product of all the mi's with various exponents times some other stuff. And the denominator is just the product of the conjugates of m, and the quotient is coprime to p ok. So every single mi that divides P, every mi appearing here must appear in the bottom in order to cancel out. Okay, and that's it. We've now proved that the Galois action is transitive. Yes?
Does this not prove something stronger? If the power of p dividing the numerator is alpha, then, let's see.
We'll end up proving the same thing. Right? You could definitely, you know, think there might be some stronger things. So, for example, you get something about how many different sigma take m to the same thing, right? Like, if you have m2 to the mi to the ei appearing in the top, so here you have mi to the ei, then you have to have the mi to the ei appearing in the bottom, so you have to have ei different sigmas that send m to mi. So, and that really, it says something. It's saying that the, it's saying something about the orbiter, about the stabilizer of M. And we'll see more precisely in a minute. I mean, that same thing is formalized really by what I've written here. And also by properties of the decomposition group, as we'll see in a minute. So the decomposition group, it's better to formulate more precisely what you're thinking by just proving this and the next thing. Okay, but yay, we've proved that the G acts transitively. On the X of I. And we have that because we simply applied that old Chinese remainder theorem thing. Chinese remainder theorem is very useful in this course. We applied that, we got this integral ideal. In the numerator, you have all the prime ideals occurring, and in the denominator, you have all the conjugates occurring, and they have to cancel out. So you have to have transitivity. And think about it for a second. If instead of Q, you had L, really there's no difference at all in what we just did. The only difference is that I have to replace this Q by an L. Otherwise, they would look identical. Maybe it's slightly different because you don't have a multiple of a prime number p, but it's still a multiple of the appropriate ideal, so it all works.
But it's notationally a little more complicated. Okay, so now the next thing, now we have to check that the EI are all the same. Any questions or comments? Sure.
So you have your prime ideal equal to your your prime ideal equal to your norm of the prime ideal. Yeah, but in general case you wouldn't have that.
But I didn't understand that.
So.
Oh, okay. So you're thinking about the case when Q is replaced by
yeah.
L.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
In general case, it would be a.
Yeah. So in.
Hover.
So in the norm, in the general case, you have A here. And you have the norm from K down to L is a multiple of the prime ideal downstairs, which I call P. So this would be equal to P times something. So you here you have P times OK times something divided by this. So you'd see that all the primes that occur in the factorization of POK appear as conjugates of M. Okay. Okay. Okay, the next thing is the fact that the EI are all the same. So notice that, as I mentioned before, the FI, the fact that they're the same is now pretty immediate, again, because O mod MI is isomorphic as a field to OK mod sigma of MI, and the isomorphism is induced by sigma. If you apply sigma to OK, you get another, you get a map to OK, and then if you question out by sigma of MI, the kernel is MI. So you get an isomorphism of fields, hence the Fs are the same for MI and sigma of MI. For the Es, well, you take the factorization, you have P OK equals product I equals 1 through G, MI to EI, and now you apply sigma, apply any element of Galois group to both sides, and you get, on the one hand, here you just get P OK again, and on the other hand, you get product I equals 1 through G, sigma of MI, the EI. And these two are equal, so the other two are equal. And since you can take any one MI to any other MI, and because you have unique factorization in the group of fractional ideals, you see that the EI are equal to the EJ for any I and J. So these are equal, which implies that let's see, if sigma of mi, if that's equal to m sub j, you get that ei equals ej. And since you can do this for any I and j, you get that all the eis are the same. So now we have the eis are all the same, equal to some common value e. We know the fi's are all the same, equal to some common value f. Now let's prove that e times f times g is equal to the degree of the extension.
Question?
Yes, please.
Did we actually prove that FIs are all the same? It's not.
They're all the same?
Yeah. They're all the same, but.
What do you guys think?
They're all the same. But, I mean,
we proved that.
Somebody explain it.
That was just the extension argument.
Well, because sigma fixes the lower, the bottom quotient.
Right. Because the sigmas that we're using, so in general, the sigmas that we use actually fix L. So. You get a field isomorphism like this, and it fixes OL mod the prime downstairs. So you really get that the relative Fs are the same as well, if that's what you're asking about. Any other questions or comments? All right, so now just to finish up, EFG equals N. So here's what you do. You take OK mod P OK. Well,
you know what the cardinality of this is, because you know OK is a free abelian group of rank n, where n is the degree of the extension. So this is of order p to the n. And on the other hand, by the Cheney's remainder theorem, this is the product OK mod mi, the e number. Now I can just put a common e, so it's mi to the e, I equals 1 through g. And each of these are p to the power of the common f. And the number of them, or g of them, so you multiply them together, when you compute the order of the right-hand side, you get, there's one additional step. So OK mod MI, this has order P to the power of F. But remember we proved that OK mod MI to the EI has order OK mod MI, the order of that to the power of E. And we proved that in order to prove that the norm is multiplicative. And we did it by writing down a filtration on OK mod MI to the EI, where the quotients in the filtration were all isomorphic to OK mod MI. So here on the right-hand side, you have a product, and it's P to the power of F, E, and you have G factors. So you have P to the E, F, G. And this is equal to P to the N, hence taking log base P of all sides, you see that N equals E, F, G, which is exactly what we wanted to prove. Yes?
How do you know the exponent is N? Size of
for this one?
Yeah.
So here what I'm doing is I'm thinking of OK as a free abelian group of rank n. So abstractly, as a free abelian group, it's isomorphic to n copies of z. If you take n copies of z and mod out by p times that, you get z mod p cross z mod p n times. So that's how. An alternative way is that the cardinality of this is the same as the norm of p, which is the determinant of multiplication by p. So that's the determinant of the diagonal matrix whose entries are all p. So that's another way to think of it. Okay, so now the first goal for today, which was to tell you why E of g equals n, and what's special in the case of a Galois extension, has been accomplished by us. So now I'm just going to show you two examples where you figure out what the meaning of E, F, and g are in particular cases. We now have this theorem. So this fact that the Galois group The fact that the Galois group acts transitively is something we use a lot. All right. So first, let's look at K over Q, a quadratic extension. So any quadratic extension is automatically Galois, and we have that for a given prime p, if we have an integer p in z, so a prime integer p, then you can associate three numbers to it, e, f, and g. And these are the numbers that are associated here. See, these numbers are really associated to the prime of the bottom field, because they don't depend on which prime you choose lying over the prime of the bottom field. So in this theorem, you had, normally when you take a prime of the bottom field and then factor it, you have maybe a different exponent for each prime up here and maybe a different residue class degree. But in the case of a Galois extension, they're all the same. They only depend on the prime in the bottom field. So if you choose a prime in the bottom field, then you get a well-defined E and a well-defined F, and it doesn't depend on which prime you choose lying over it. So here, to an integer P, you have an E, F, and a G. And we've proven that E times F times G, so I'm denoting this. E times F times G is equal to the degree of the extension, which is 2. So that tells you that exactly one of those numbers is going to be 2 and the other ones are going to be 1.
which is pretty cool. You see something about the structure of the splitting of primes in a quadratic extension, which you could also kind of see from just looking at how quadratic polynomials factor, and we know that that mirrors the factorization of primes, but it's a nice consistency check. So one possibility is that EP is equal to 2. Another possibility is that FP is equal to 2. So in each case, one of them is 2 and the other one, other two are equal to 1. And a third possibility is GP equals 2. So when EP equals 2, then you say that P ramifies. And this happens finitely many times for the primes that divide the discriminant. When FP equals 2, then you say that P is inert. And when GP equals 2, you say that P splits. Let's look at this in one specific example. Let's take Q adjoint square root of 5. I think that's the one I took. Yes.
The comment about this happens finitely many times for primes that divide the discriminant.
Yes.
Why is that?
I haven't proved it yet.
Oh,
I think I'm going to make it. I'm going to put it in a homework assignment at some point in the future, as a nice problem. But it's a fact that if you take a number field K, then the primes that ramify in K are exactly the primes that divide the discriminant. So
we
back over
that.
What?
We haven't proven that.
Yeah, but to give you a hint as to why that might be true, let's suppose you have OK equal to Z adjoin alpha. Suppose it's monogenic. And let's say alpha satisfies, well, its minimal polynomial is f of x. Then the primes that ramify are exactly the primes for which, when you factor this polynomial modulo p, you have a multiple root. And those are exactly the primes that divide the discriminant of the polynomial. And you could just generalize this slightly to get that in any ring of integers, the primes that ramify are the same as the primes that divide the discriminant. It's a useful fact to know.
Yeah, no.
And I mean, what I showed you here already shows you you can bound the set of primes that ramify by just taking any alpha in a ring of integers, computing its discriminant, and that gives a bound on the primes that ramify.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's useful to know. So there are these three cases. Now let's consider an example. Let's say k equals q adjoint root 5.
Sorry, can I ask a quick follow-up?
Please do.
You said you could take any alpha, but you need an alpha so
yeah.
that generates a number.
Yeah, otherwise, I guess if f is the, let's say f is the characteristic polynomial, if you took an alpha, it'd be safe if you define f to be the Kerr poly of alpha, because then if alpha doesn't generate an order, then this would have zero discriminant, since it would be a power of the minimal polynomial. So we'll be safe then. If it has zero discriminant, then you haven't bounded the primes very well. But yes, it's a very good observation. You want the alpha to generate an order, otherwise it's sort of a degenerate case. Thank you. Okay, so now let's look at Q adjoint root 5. And the ramified primes, so this has discriminant. What's the discriminant of this field? 5, I think.
Yeah,
it's
5.
Yeah. Yeah. It's either
2 or 1 or 8.
Yeah. So the way you have 1 plus, you kind of remember that. You remember that this is in there, in the ring of integers. And whenever you have that denominator, that 2 factor isn't there. So it's 5. Okay, so this discriminant is 5, and so the only prime that ramifies is 5. So this happens for p equals 5, not only 5. And it's pretty clear that 5 ramifies because the ideal generated by 5 factors is square root of 5 times square root of 5. Okay, what about inert? Well, we can understand the factorization by factoring x. Let's see, we have to find the minimal polynomial of this generator for the ring of integers, but let's just avoid 2. You can deal with 2 as a separate case. So if you avoid 2, then you can find a polynomial with the property that this index, find an element alpha with the property that the index is coprime to 2, and then you can use that for the purposes of understanding factorization. So if you take alpha equal to root 5, then this has index 2,
And for any prime except for 2, we can understand how that prime factors by factoring the polynomial x squared minus 5 modulo that prime. So I'm going to assume now that p is not 2, just for simplicity. So now you take x squared minus 5, and you wonder, how does that factor? Well, the inert case is when x squared minus 5 doesn't, when it's irreducible, log p. And the split case is when x squared minus 5 is reducible, log p. Because then you have two factors. Now, irreducible means that 5 is not a square, log p. This being the Legendre symbol. And reducible means that 5 is a square, log p. And of course, you can't write that down without immediately applying quadratic reciprocity. And here you get the, so in general, 5p, that's the same as minus 1 to the 5 minus 1 over 2, p minus 1 over 2, p5. And 5 minus 1 over 2, that's 4 over 2, which is 2. So this exponent is always even no matter what. So this is p5. And that only depends on p modulo 5. So you try each of the cases, and you get that when p is, so it's minus 1 when p is 2 and 3, so plus or minus 2 mod 5. And it's plus 1 when p is plus or minus 1 mod 5. So the splitting behavior, that is whether or not p is inert or splits, depends exactly on the residue class of p modulo 5. And Dirichlet's theorem, or more generally Chebotarev density, tells you that this case happens 50% of the time, and that case happens 50% of the time. So half the time f is 2 and half the time g is 2. Okay, next let's look at q adjoint cube root of 2. This is not a Galois extension.
What exactly do you mean by half the time?
I mean the Dirichlet density of the primes with the first property is 1/2, and the Dirichlet density of the primes with the second property is 1/2.
Is it equivalent to the intuitional density?
The what density?
The density.
So if you say the limit as like n goes to infinity of the probability that pick a prime less than n.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Dirichlet density, is it? Well, no, but
that's
might
not, but does that, does that get the same thing?
You have to weight it. Oh, shoot, forget. It's half either way, but you have to weight the density correctly. I'm going to not answer that question because I don't feel 100% confident that, I mean, I know this stuff, but I just don't want to say something stupid that will mislead you. Except to say that Frank Caligari's lecture on Thursday is going to be all about more details about specific examples, but in a more general case, which illustrate these densities. So I'm sure if you ask him the same question, he'll answer it, since that's what he's preparing for Thursday. So Thursday is going to talk about a degree 6 extension, and he'll talk about the probability that you have kind of each of these cases there. And it'll be more subtle, and it's a better illustration of the Chebotarev density theorem. This is sort of a special case. Yes? Okay. So let's look at q adjoint cube root of 2 and get an example which shows that this conclusion need not be true when the extension is not Galois. So let's suppose k over q is, well, k is q adjoint cube root of 2. So this is not a Galois extension. It's not Galois because if you take a cube root of unity and multiply it by cube root of 2, you get something that is a conjugate of cube root of 2, but it's not in that field. So this is not Galois. But you can still, you know, factor. So we know that the ring of integers is generated by cube root of 2.
So if we factor the polynomial x cubed minus 2 mod p, that will tell us how p splits in the ring of integers. And the example I have here is mod 3. So mod 3, this factors as x minus 2 times x plus 1 squared. That's an element of f3, which on x. This is mod 3. So that means that if you factor 3 in the ring of integers in the field, it's some prime m1 times another prime m2 squared.
Is that x minus 2 and x plus 1 the same?
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
The first one's right, the second one's minus.
No, x plus 1 cubed is a correct factor.
Dang it.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. That's a little annoying because then that doesn't illustrate what I want. But if we just try another one, we'll find one. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so this is actually... So this is not an illustration of what I wanted to illustrate. So let's try 5 instead.
Well, actually, if you want the ramification, we want it.
I want an example in which E,
but if
in which this theorem is wrong.
Yeah, but if you want the ramification, then the prime better divide the discriminant, and the discriminant is...
I could still give an example in which the theorem's wrong. And for 5, in fact, you do get 1. But the E's are the same, but the F's are different for 5. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So for 5, the factorization is x plus 2 times x squared plus 3x plus 4. And okay, so that's a factorization for 5, and this is irreducible. This doesn't have a root mod 5. I claim. You can just check that, I hope. Better check that. So 0 is not a root. 1 is not a root.
You can check the discriminant.
Oh, that's a good point. B squared minus 4ac. Yeah, okay, so that's not... So... 3 is not a square mod 5. Perfect. Okay, so this is the factorization. So here you have that one of the f's is equal to 1, and the other f is equal to 2. So the f's are different. And that's an illustration that this theorem can be wrong when your extension is not Galois. And now, the next part of this example I have in the notes will work differently than the way I wrote it up, because of this factorization being incorrect the way I've written it. So we'll skip that. All right, so now I can officially introduce the decomposition group, which is the beginning of section 10.3. So the situation is the same as before. We have the maximal ideal of OK. K is assumed to be a general. Well, let's say K over L is Galois, then with group G, then the decomposition group of M, which is a subgroup of G, this is the group of elements sigma in G, which is sigma sends M to itself. In other words, it's the stabilizer of M when you view G as acting on the primes that are the conjugates of M. Stabilizer in G of M. So that's the decomposition group.
And so one thing that you can deduce immediately from the orbit stabilizer theorem is that the index of the decomposition group in G is, so this is orbit stabilizer, this is equal to the cardinality of the orbit, which is G. So this is the number of conjugates of M. So that's by the orbit stabilizer theorem. So for example, if the decomposition group were trivial, then that would be the same as having the number of orbits equal to the order of the Galois group, splitting completely. So if decomposition group trivial is the same as splitting completely, decomposition group the entire Galois group is the same as the prime being inert. It doesn't split at all for an unramified prime, well, for any prime. But that's pretty clear. I mean, if there's only one prime lying over, then there's no condition here. So the decomposition group is, you can think of it as kind of a, it's a group theoretic measure of the number of primes. It's a subgroup like this. So quick question, is this automatically a normal subgroup or not?
Yes.
Why do you think that?
Why? Yeah, sorry, give me a second.
Okay, sure.
But don't give me a second.
What about conjugates stabilizing something else?
I mean,
are you like sensitivity or something?
Doesn't follow the, from the fact that it's a stabilizer or something.
Is a stabilizer or something always a normal subgroup?
No.
No, he says.
Yeah. It doesn't follow from the nice transitivity of our Galois stuff.
In fact, this not being true falls from the nice transitivity of our Galois stuff.
Well, sorry, doesn't conjugates stabilize some other prime, right?
Yeah,
it
exactly.
Something
yeah.
The orbit is M.
Exactly. So you're all, it's the niceness says exactly that this isn't true, and precisely what turns out to be true. So here's what you have. If you have an element tau in the Galois group, then tau d m tau inverse, the conjugate of this group, is d tau m. So by looking at how the Galois group acts, you can figure out what happens to the decomposition groups under conjugation. So the only time that this would be normal would be if there's only one prime lying over. Wait, that can't be. But it is true.
Oh, it'd have to be by transitivity.
I mean, no, if your extension is
abelian, that's wrong, because it's abelian, it's wrong.
So, I mean, then they just have the same group.
Yeah. So, for example, if they're abelian, then these two are the same. But that's possible. You could have totally different, the decomposition group for one prime, the decomposition group for another prime could easily be equal. For an abelian extension, they always would be. So, yes.
So this didn't actually prove anything?
Well, it answered the question, should you expect it to be normal, right? The answer is no, but it could be. I mean, it didn't answer anything. I agree. It did not answer anything. This does not prove anything, but this is a good thing to think about. It tells you that if this is a normal subgroup, then the decomposition group doesn't depend in any way on M. It just depends on which prime that M lies over. And that is true for an abelian extension. It's not going to be true for a non-abelian extension, usually. Okay, so here, let me write down the exact sequence that I will prove right after spring break and before we switch to elliptic curves. Here it is. We have this decomposition group, and if you have an element of it, it has the nice property that it fixes M, hence it induces an automorphism of OK mod M over OL mod, let's call this P. So here, P is OL intersect M.
So given any element of the decomposition group, you get a well-defined automorphism here. But amazingly, it's a surjective map. This reduction map is surjective. And just you define the inertia group to be the kernel. And remember, this was a finite extension of finite fields, so it's Galois automatically. And this is F M over P. So now we get from this that the decomposition group has cardinality. It's a multiple of F M over P. And the multiple is by the inertia group, the cardinality of the inertia group I M over P.
So let's see. There's one other thing. The inertia group has cardinality E. The inertia group exactly measures the ramification of your prime ideal. So the decomposition group is this group that has order, which is just the product of F and E. And you have this exact sequence. And that's the first thing I'll prove when we get back. That is really the only thing that's difficult here is surjectivity. Okay? So have a great spring break. And there is going to be class on Thursday, but not taught by me. And turn your homework in here.
Did you bother saving what would make this something not in the...
Okay. Yeah, I'll be leaving about 2:45. I might be a Maser
bot.
Everywhere, yeah.
Any more problems?
Yes, right now.
Which is weird.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
like.
Sure, someone was reading the water shut down last weekend.
Is there somewhere to hand in the problems?
Yeah, I'll take it and give it to Andre this afternoon.
No, at least yet she is.
See you later.
I don't know how accurate that is.
Can you? That's it.
Are there problem sets?
I did not make one for spring break. Sorry. No problem set for spring break.
Oh, no, I just saw the thing online.
Yeah, I was starting to make one.
I saw
yeah.
number 7 and was too afraid. So
yeah, I thought about problem. I thought I needed to extend it. I was excited. I'll just give you a problem set after spring break. And that
that's
awesome. Yeah. So no problem set over spring break. Should have mentioned that.
What were the statistics for the midterm?
What were the what?
The statistics.
Statistics?